Okay, so this is the final session, the plenary session, and what we've asked to do is each of the panel are going to sum up in 2 minutes their thoughts and ideas of what's come out of today. And I did say 2 minutes. So Annabelle's going to go first with her 2 minutes. Did I mention that?
A number of themes that kind of really had a resonance for me throughout the day. I can kind of run through a list of ways. There was one particular session that kind of multiple themes came through me, and it was around kind of headlines about the role of crafts and the critique of the museum. And I really liked Rose's phrase about how objects are removed from the flow of life when they go into a museum collection, and that the role that craft can have in kind of in a way reanimating objects and practice and collections, and the case studies of obviously Rosa, how she was talking, and then Robert Fontenot and the Lacan recycling. I thought were really nice kind of companion pieces of completely different approaches to how that can be very successful. Other themes that came through for me was about the craft means many things, not only to different people but in different cultures, and how when you're looking at emerging markets for contemporary craft, that actually is very relevant as to whether, in a way, you get very bound up in categories, and that's kind of my next thing about categories, but when you think about markets, that actually, in a way, the market can dictate the category for which that we're considering and have a real kind of strength. Issues about categories, how craft was talked about in terms of how it relates to design and art, and actually, perhaps we should be talking about how people in the art relate back to craft rather than craft or being quite low down in the hierarchy. Because particularly with exhibitions like Craft Making, which is something very personal to me, was that people are really, really fascinated by the making. And it has a huge resonance across the board in people. And very finally, I think a big, big issue that kept coming through in everything that was about was that authorship. Which is something that has as important in this country as it is in Africa or Japan or anywhere. I think it's endemic to discussion around craft and craft.
Yeah, I think Annabelle did a fantastic job. I would totally agree with her that the issue of hybridity is absolutely central to everything that we've been talking about. And I'm also particularly interested. I'm also particularly interested in hybridity in terms of artists as curators, craftspeople as curators, and curators as craftspeople and collectors. So how these categories merge is absolutely fascinating. So many of the artists that spoke today talked about their own collections, drawing from their own collections. Curators today talked about their own artistic experience and how it informs what they do. And so I'm wondering what the connection is with craft here, and if craft absolutely kind of fuels this sense of hybridity. The other thing that I would say that I think is an underlying tension is with the issue of authenticity. And there are lots of strong feelings about that. But from my perspective, I would say that no matter how hard we try to grasp it, that it's something that's always fluid, and that one thing we need to be careful of is in pushing for authenticity, sometimes then what can emerge is something that's frozen, that we can critique in museums as frozen, but that in larger cultures also can happen. So I think the issue of hybridity and authenticity are absolutely true.
Gosh. My favourite word of the day was mikmash, which I thought was fantastic. And
I thought it just really summed up that sort of feeling of, you know, growing up, how our identities have become very complicated and complex, and nothing is, you know, that black and white or simple. And that's a good thing, but, you know, we have all this range of lived experience that comes from so many different places. And, you know, the thing about sort of dreaming in French and English and counting in French and speaking French and English was, I think, also really sums up that mixture, which is great. And I think helps to change the sensibilities of people around you and through your art. And that is the strength of the art and the way that it can influence, I think. And, that was a nice expression of that. It also, I think, links very nicely to Nina's work, which I heard earlier, which was confluence. So I think what you were saying actually had a lot of resonance with the way that Nina had approached her project, and that very lovely idea of confluence rather than moving apart. It's actually seeing a confluence in things, and there was a lot of resonance, I think, with your presentation and Nina's, in the sense of recognising different stories that aren't so different, but bringing them together so one actually sees them juxtaposed and interconnecting in a very interesting way, in the way that histories do weave in and out and interconnect. I thought what was also interesting is how artists often need to be away from their place of origin, in a way, to actually come to know who they are and understand themselves. I always remember, Nina, you writing that about Shanti Panchal and how he needed to move to the UK, yeah, to discover really something about the Gujarati and about his own Gujarati identity. And so similarly, I think that in the context of internationalism, you know, the way we're talking about it, benefits and really thinking internationally, but actually moving away from one's home in that sense. And many makers who find themselves here, who are studying here and are still in English, actually perhaps do find themselves in quite an interesting way that we then benefit from because of the way that they present that work back. That's me. And what I just quickly also, I liked what you were saying, Janet, about queer theory and museum theory being aligned in the strategy that artists use, which I thought was really interesting, and that fluidity. And the offering of a range of solutions, and that creative practice offers a range of solutions. And I think in many ways the Shape of Things exhibitions have in their own way offered a range of solutions, and talking about whether Susan Warren is the, you know, is in that mix of coming to a range of solutions in different ways, I think it's, you know, quite interesting. And also the fact that they're not reductive solutions. So I liked what you said about not having a reductive approach, and this is all about, you know, the complexity of identity, that you can't afford to be reductive about things, and that's very enriching and true.
It's interesting that this notion of recycling also came up and about several different times in really interesting ways.
First thing I'd like to say really is to celebrating the artists who made up the Shape of Things, and because their work is wonderful. I wish I could afford it, but it is beautiful stuff.
You do.
I still couldn't afford it. But nonetheless, I appreciate it. I appreciate all the work, and as an outsider coming into this debate, I'm Hassan Mohammed Ali. I work for the Arts Council, but I promise not to do Arts Council robots. I thought coming into the debate, I really enjoyed the two artists' presentations because I think they reminded me of the essential quest of humanity to try and find itself in relation to its world, whether that's a quest through history, across geographical boundaries, across cultural boundaries, language and so on and so forth. That seems to be something essential in craft. And I got a kind of understanding of that from the two artists' presentations. But I was also happy to see that that the craft communities is riven with disagreement, as any other branch of the arts, and that was extremely refreshing. And long may it be so, because of course all those contradictions and tensions and things, that's how we get nearer to the truth. So one thing it seemed to me was, maybe it's just debates that I listen to, remind me of a book by a man called Thomas Carlyle. He wrote a book called Past and Present in 1843, and he railed against industrial capitalism in Victorian England and how it was destroying craft and the medieval guild system, and how he wished that it could go back to medieval times, him and people like William Morris and the Arts and Craft movement. But he also said, which I think he was right in saying, that that somehow we've been reduced to what he called a cash nexus. The notion that everything is reduced to profit. And in the debate that we've had today, it seems to me that was kind of at the root of a lot of things which were being said. And I then pondered on the fact that Sir Henry Moore Sculptor got for £17.1 million last week. And why? Because all the rich across the world are not sinking their money into banks and investment, they're sinking their money into art. And I wonder, when it comes to the craft community and the work that you do, whether or not your proximity to the international arts market and what Thomas Carlyle would call the cash nexus, and also, I would say, also the professional curatorial class and the way in which they interpret the work you do, are quite choppy waters for you to be sailing in. And this is just an observation from an outsider, as I am. And it threw out lots of things for me. These are questions. Relationship between tradition and modernity. It's a key one. It has to be continually debated. The notion of power relations between, if you like, the industrialized, Northern Europe and America and so on and so forth, and the rest of the world, and the notion of power relations, whether they're explicit or implicit. And sometimes I think they need to be made more explicit, and we have to find terms which I think make more explicit power relations between us and the rest of the world, especially the terrible times in which we live. And obviously there's, you know, I think this is, and I end on this, there are terms like hybridity, like interculturalism, like transnational, and I raise the question, do you think terms like that obscure the power relations which are present in your line of work, or make them more explicit? Because if they don't make explicit the power relations in terms of the arena in which you work, it seems to me they're questionable terms, which may be a lot much used to you. That's probably true.
Thank you. And now's the opportunity really for you to ask questions to both the speakers here, but also those who have talked throughout the day. You are primarily at the front, but also dotted round. But in keeping with the aims of the Shape of Things, I wonder if it would be useful just to have in mind the key aim for the Shape of Things was about affecting change. And it was about facilitating learning and professional development and exploring by seeing practice happen and seeing the changes that made. And I'd be really interested to hear whether, for the speakers, there are things that you would particularly like us to take away and act upon. So what your actions would you like to see? And then perhaps for those who have listened, what are the points that you're going to take away and go, I'm going to do that. That's like a big change or a small change, but that's not really tangible. That having sat here and listened today, I feel I can go away and do it. But that, or any other questions,
This is not actually a question, it is a comment on the keynote speaker, Yasmin Anubhai Brown. It was a very witty and brilliant talk.
But there's one point she made I have to take issue with, where she described contemporary and modern Indian art as derivative. And I think that is a hugely sweeping and false generalization, which really cannot go unchallenged. And it is making a nonsense of the processes started by artists like Rabindranath Tagore, Jamini Roy, Amrita Shergill, right down to the artists who are producing work, you know, that belong to the Indian as well as the international canon. So thank you.
People from the venues who've had some of the Shape of Things shows. My name's Sophie Heath, I'm the curator at Bilston Craft Gallery, and we were fortunate to have the work of Halima Cassell and Seiko Kinoshita at Bilston Craft Gallery. And we did question the how much of a challenge it would be for us to explore and deliver on one of the goals of the programme, which was to build diverse audiences for contemporary craft. And our experience was pleasantly surprising in that the evaluation that we did showed, you know, a much higher than average diverse attendance to the show and good feedback comments in those terms. So I'd be interested to hear if other venues had the same experience.
Yvonne is in the room. I think there's only Yvonne here.
I would generally agree. I mean, we probably have quite a lot of visitors, particularly from the Asian community already, but certainly, you know, that was one of our aims with wanting to take part in the Shape of Things programme. And we also kind of put on events and things around the exhibition programme. We had Tanvi and Taslim's exhibitions in summer 2010, and then we also took Bilston's show last summer as well. So we had a series of workshops and events and different things. Taslim came and made work in the gallery when his show was on. So we did quite a lot of public engagement work around the shows as well, which was really useful. I'm at Touchstones Rochdale.
Julia isn't here from Bristol, the curator of the show that shows that Rosa and I did, but Rosa asked me to say that that the visitor figures were huge. They were the highest, apart from Banksy, that any show in that gallery had.
And I think Banksy, the Bristol Museum had the larger audience. But
You might have helped a bit. 33, 34. Is that the Bristol show? Yes, it was. We had hundreds of people who were part of the work. But I just wanted to respond to what Hassan said, because how can you not respond to what he said? Do terms like the terms you said obscure the power relations within which you work or make them more explicit? Are they useful? Because it's a difficult position as an artist who's, you know, we've been given a great opportunity to make a big piece of work within a very interesting context with people who are working with great integrity, with the right intentions, and addressing, you know, issues of misrepresentation, underrepresentation within this medium. And then there's the whole, on the other side of that, there's the whole thing of being labelled and categorised and using different parts of yourself, you know, in order to, you know, get commissions, and, you know, so it's actually impossible to answer the question. But I just wanted to say that it is very difficult to answer that question, and I think, I mean, we made our pieces 2 years ago, so it's very interesting coming here and sort of reflecting on you know, where we're at now in relation to that. And I think it was, I was talking with Chen last night, and he was saying a bit like, you know, in 10 years' time, we'll look back and it'll be a bit like, you know, that was a time of adolescence, and how have we grown? And but what's been great is that it's the shape of things has had a long enough. I know it's not long enough, but it's had a good time frame, enough to kind of learn things and implement them and reflect on them. And I think it's sort of, it is a shame it's coming to an end, but it's the longest time I've had in order to sort of reflect on certain aspects of my practice and be given the chance to actually put something out in the world in a sort of supported way. But it is a double-edged sword in that, you know, there are certain barriers that I have come across since making that work in other realms, as I work across mediums, and in terms of the way I might be perceived by, say, certain curators or, you know, that are difficult. But, you know, it's this thing of embracing the fact that, you know, through one's practice, and it was a commission that was about artists who use craft media, not makers, in a narrow sense of the word. It was broad enough in its approach, you know, for us to be able to kind of, as you said, fit in everywhere, fit in nowhere, and embrace that whole, you know, that vocabulary, really. So there's no answer, but I just want to respond, because that was a great thing to put in. So there we go. Anything else?
I just wanted to quickly say too that it seems to me that with all these discussions that a lot of them are really interlaced with ethics issues, ethics of economic and financial issues, ethics of representation. And thinking through these ethics issues in a very broad way, I think can only help us as we, you know, rethink what craft is and how it should function in institutions.
Yes, I just wanted to make a point, and it's kind of strange because I can almost feel my sort of heart pumping out of my rib cage, but when I came to this day this morning, I was feeling very kind of positive, and this notion about affecting change and to kind of see how this would be presented here, because I remember Diverse Cultures at the Crafts Council, I can't remember, in the early 90s, and I did take 91, and I was one of the artists, and kind of looking back on it, it did feel more about being an exhibition of craft makers who weren't white, rather than craft makers who had a rich culture. So I was kind of looking forward to this notion of exploring how people are affecting change. But I feel I'm kind of leaving with a bitter taste, because even though I suspect there's a lot of kind of positive issues in what Karen Beata was saying, I felt that for me there was some kind of comments that maybe mask some of those issues, like saying things like Africa doesn't have any museums. And I guess maybe in a direct way, I wanted to know how does that statement come to being said at a study day like this or a conference like this?
I did, as a journalist, investigation journalist, I did a series for German Deutsche Welle in the late 70s about going to countries and going into the major capitals and looking for where I could see some of the arts, the crafts, and whatever of the country. And I didn't find anything there. Then I went into the Museum of Mankind, then in existence here in England, and looked at African textiles and the collection there. Went to my German museum in Hamburg and found 35,000 uncatalogued objects of ceramics in there. Go to the Museum of the Quai Branly and the American Crafts Museums, etc., and you find vast collections there. The biggest collection of West African bubus is in Baal, and the definitive book has been written by a Swiss person. So I wrote a series of broadcasted things which were countries without a, people without a heritage, people without a language because their own languages aren't transcribed, etc. And I decided that it is time to look at what these countries want themselves. You know, do they want museums? This National Museum, which cost 25 million, and most of the money went into the pockets of the a lady of the ruling family who has the construction company. So all these concrete buildings are permanently empty. And what goes into them as a exhibition or collection is actually quite sad because, you know, our museums, British museums, you know, the collections, you know, it's actually quite disgusting that nothing is there. But they don't, I mean, I've been struggling with this because you talk to people, whether they go to a museum and they say, what is this? You know, you go into the villages or even into the smaller towns, they knew treasure houses. You know, the chieftains, the kings, they had treasure houses. And it's not that they go and have a look at something in a museum. You know, they're either surrounded by it or they do a festivity. So that concept of taking a house and putting things into it and making it into an educational institution to the countries I've visited is quintessentially colonial and European. I mean, South Africa is 62, I think, but you count the museums in all the other African countries. And you can say the same about South America. I think you might be able to say the same about some rural areas in India, couldn't you? Do they have museums? Do they have a lot of museums in India? In, you know, the smaller towns of... No, I'm asking you. You know, I know that we have very few. Yeah, but not that many, are they? I mean, is there a culture of going to a museum? I mean, I talk about the countries in Africa I've visited. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. So it's not a museum culture as such, I think.
What day is it today? Sorry, what day is it? It's Friday. Monday, a friend of mine, Gus, has just, last year he's been travelling around Africa and he has a fantastic programme on BBC 4 called The Lost Kingdoms of Africa and he has a book that's coming out. The last programme, it's a bit of a plug for him, is on Monday, but perhaps I could sort of... cautiously ask you, maybe it might be of an interest to perhaps see, watch some of those programs because it might, hopefully it would be of interest for you and maybe hearing his experiences and seeing the museums that he's visited in Africa might be, well, I think would be of interest.
I think it sounds like something that would be of interest for all of us.
Yes, what's yes. Lost Kingdom... I'll have to tell him that I'm plugging his book, Lost Kingdoms of Africa by Gus Casely Hayford.
If you want the authentic one, read Basil Davidson. 40 years ago.
I'd like to just say one more thing about this, is in museum studies.
So all I was going to say was, sorry, that one of the reasons I have taken an interest in being up until I was 15, I lived in Kenya, in Nairobi, and actually we used to be dragged to the Nairobi Museum all the time, every time a guest was there, and they've been there for years. It's an ethnography museum with skulls and things that Dr. Leakey had dug up, and I don't know what it's like now, but museums are there, and they've served a purpose in the long run for me and many others.
I didn't stay down there. I just sat down
What I wanted to say briefly is that it's very interesting to think about museums in North America and also in Europe as many of them evolving into museums as cultural centers. If you think about particularly culturally specific museums like the National Museum of the American Indian, becoming more like a cultural center and learning from indigenous cultures in, you know, in other parts of the world, and understanding also how cultural heritage in other parts of the world may take on conservation through smoking, for example, as a very different way, but also it's a way of preserving cultural heritage. So things are done in different ways, but it doesn't mean that the heritage itself isn't equally valuable. But sometimes it's use, and it's the group that matters more than anything else. So I think we need to move away from the idea of museums as something that are fixed and that are, you know, a box.
Yes, because temples, mosques, gurdwaras are often...
Absolutely, absolutely. Uh-huh. And museums, as we talked about this morning, are incorporating this Newark Museum with the, we talked about how it incorporates religious ideas, so.
I'm Shari Dai, I'm an academic from the University of Cape Town. I just wanted to thank, sorry I don't know your name, but the lady who opened up this discussion. Because I've also been feeling a slight unease in what have been a really interesting set of conversations today. And I think it's around a certain cultural essentialism, if I can call it that, that I think is still there in a lot of the conversations. For me, being an African, you wouldn't look at me and think, oh, she's African, but I am. I didn't really feel represented in the conversations that happened about Africa, and I think that's symptomatic of what I'm talking about, is that, you know, that people have a particular notion in mind of what I am or what you are based on, what you look like and what that means, and then all kinds of inferences are drawn. And I think, even when, Janet, you were talking about hybridity, and I think even in that notion of hybridity, we're still sticking to this, that there's still implied a kind of purity of these two things coming together. And you know, I'm sure you're aware as well that there's been a major critique of the very notion of hybridity. And so now we have ideas of transnationalism to get past that. And then someone mentioned a confluence. I think someone was talking about confluence. Well, is that better? Because we have rivers coming together and then there's more of a blurring. I mean, I don't know. You know, there's no good term. But I was unsettled, and I just wanted to add my voice to what other people are saying. I think that there's this sense of there is some kind of authenticity that we can get at, and we can exchange across these barriers. But you know, I think we want to do something more, and I don't know how to get there or what that is. But you know, maybe that's where we need to go next.
I take your point on board, and I think one of the questions I want to ask really is around the notion of actually the use of craft and the fact that the focus is on craft and the handmade and the very individual manipulating an object in order to create something that they feel represents them, actually taking apart where they're from, who they are, what their background is. It's that on that individual person, and that facilitating a dialogue or a conversation with someone else who's created something else from their perspective. And I'm just interested whether these exhibitions and whether people's experience as artists and as people who've been involved in these, has the notion of craft facilitated those dialogues, which removes almost the notion of where that person is from and talks more from an individual perspective about how they use the materials and how they are similar and different from other people's uses.
I don't know if anybody wants to very swiftly respond to that, so I can see a hand. Is that
I'm Rezia, and I just wanted to add that it was David Kay who came up with the Shape of Things project. I don't know if all the people here know. And thank you very much for raising the concept that craft and making, the importance of craft. I had just sort of, it was 2004, I think, and I graduated in 98 from the Surrey Institute of Art and Design, and he came, and I wasn't wearing the headscarf when I graduated. I was just an Asian who went through the British art education and found the craft of weaving. And to me, when I did put the headscarf on, I found it very difficult to when people would see who I am, you know, and try to find out whether I have, you know, make comments on where I've learned the craft, and it was never England. But I feel I am very British, and to me, my art and craft, which is weaving, is what I'd love to come back to all the time. And I struggle, I have to say, with producing and pieces that has to explain about me and my background. I want to be just a maker. And when David came to me and he said, you know, talked about his project and his concept, and I said, I don't want to be boxed, I don't want to be categorized, I am a person who makes this craft, this art. And he said, you won't be. The reason why I've come to you is because your work is developing and you're coming into your culture rather than you're making work that is just because you are you've got this culture. Does that make sense? I don't know whether I'm making sense, but I just want to say that it is very important to go away from who we are in order to find ourselves, and it is very, very important to keep making what we make, you know, and we can easily be complicating. Our lives are complicated enough to sort of, you know, make it more complicated. So I think, yeah, I think we're all, the connection is because we are interested in making the maker, and let's carry on and let's see where it goes from here. So both of you, the final commentators, have sort of, in a way, I hope, Deirdre, you know, we've sort of brought back where the project started from. That's it.
Thank you. That's a really lovely comment to end on, because I think it does bring us back to the aim of the shape of things. And the reason that we're all in this room is because we're interested in making, in craft, but also in identity and freeing up spaces, freeing up thinking, and moving into a way in which there's opportunity for dialogue and discussion before we close doors. So I'd like to thank everybody for coming today. Really huge thank you to all those who presented and put work into what I thought were absolutely fascinating presentations. They were really, really high quality, really across the board. The notes will go up onto the Shape of Things website. Obviously they need bringing together and fine-tuning, but they will be there as a resource afterwards. Obviously, a huge thanks must go to Rupert for bringing this all together. And to take it back. And to David Cade for initiating and really pulling this initiative really thoughtfully and making it that opportunity for quite a challenging debate, but politely spoken. Your badges, think of the environment, hand them in downstairs. Yes. And I'd just like to hand over to Deirdre.
In addition to Ruth, I'd really like to thank Emma Sire as well, who's the coordinator for the Shape of Things. These things are never easy to organise, so Ruth and Emma have done a sterling job. And finally, I just wanted to say how fantastic it is to see all the Shape of Things artists here together in one room, and to have seen your images come up earlier. It was just a delight last night when I was going through all my notes and, you know, looking back through all the exhibitions and how wonderfully poetic they were, and all the, you know, as you were saying, the chance to reflect and come together again and again, and you feel like a little family. You know, the family are all here today. But thank you for your ingenuity and, you know, for being the catalyst for us all being here today.
Thanks.
Now, rush off to New York.
Yes, exactly. So now we're doing
the rush off. Does everybody know the way? So, Janet, describe briefly.
So we're going to go out the building, make a left towards London Road, and then take the pathway on the left down about two blocks, and you'll see it on the left, yeah. Big white column.
It's called New Walk, and it's a pedestrianized avenue all the way down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.